everyone. I'm Rachel, here with Ari, and we're your hosts for the Merry Writer podcast. This week, we're on episode 214, asking our guest, how can you write middle grade characters well? Before we dive into the topic, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening if you haven't already. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with friends and feel free to write a review.
Now, please help us welcome Serena Labreck to the show. Serena, thank you so much for joining us, and it's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, wonderful. Before we go further, would you like to tell everyone why middle grade stories are still quite popular?
Sure. You know, it's a very unique genre that I think speaks to a lot of people, even regardless of age. It has themes that a lot of people can really connect to, such as friendship and family. Found family is very common in middle grade, and I know a lot of people like that. They tend to feature healthy and supportive relationships, which is always really nice to read about. They also feature a lot of focus on the adventure and wonder. They tend to be less like overly dark and gritty as some of the older genres. And dark and gritty can be a lot of fun to read, but sometimes you just want to read something that's more lighthearted and laid back. I also think they're good for people of any age, really, because for young readers, they're kind of the introduction story that gets them hooked on reading. Whereas for older readers, they're very nostalgic. They remind me of curling up in the library of a great book between classes. There's a quote by C.S. Lewis I really like that's a children's story that can be only enjoyed by children isn't a good children's story in the slightest. That's a quote I really agree with. I feel like a lot of people dismiss books for young readers because they're just for kids and somehow that makes them not good literature, but that's really completely wrong. The great thing about these stories is that they're accessible across all ages from middle school and up, and they're something we can bond over.
That actually is a really, really good quote, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. I'm 30 and I still read middle grade books, and honestly I sometimes prefer them than reading young adult or new adult or even just adult because some of those themes, like I love found family tropes, by the way, it's absolutely my favorite, but just a lot of the themes that get discussed in middle grade books, I feel like that's something that, yeah, we kind of learn as kids, but also we're still learning some of those themes as we get older, depending on what life throws at us and work and, you know, if you decide to go back to school and just who you surround yourself with in real life. I like how you mentioned that reading middle grade books at any age, like it's something to bond with, whether you're an adult with a child or just whoever. There's so much to love about middle grade books.
Yeah, I have to admit, I agree. I get a lot of nostalgia out of it because there are certain books I remember from my childhood. And I am one of those people that love the darker, gritty stuff. I like my high fantasy. I like my adventure that can have danger and sometimes death and everything. But sometimes you need a palate cleanse. And it's really nice to go and get those books where you know there's not going to be something stressful or dark or overwhelming. It's just, you know, even if you don't know the story, it just gives you that kind of, yeah, you could manage it. And yeah, I have those moments where it's like, you know what, I've had too much of the other. I'll just read through some of my favorite books. And it kind of gives me a little, like I said, like a little, oh, nostalgia. I remember when I used to read this when I was this age and we did this. And I find that certain stories trigger memories a lot. Like you said, you remember sitting in the library and everything. And I do that. Like, I remember, oh, I was reading this book and it was this sunny day and my sister was there and such when he said this. And it just reminds you so much of your past. If you're reading older stories, obviously, if you're not reading newer stories, but yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean. When I was a kid, my mother would read stories to me and my sisters at night. And sometimes when I read middle grade books, it's like, I'm just back there listening to her and getting the excitement that we all had, like cheering as she got to the best parts.
That's so sweet. Yeah, I mean, it is true because it kind of goes along with the C.S. Lewis quote you mentioned about how they bring back those memories. And even if you read them as a kid, that doesn't mean you can't reread them. If you enjoyed them as a kid, you probably still will enjoy them as an adult because you have those memories and the book is still somewhat relatable to you.
I actually think you can get extra layers as an adult because a lot of middle grade, you'll have the children, but you'll also have adult characters. And as a child reading it, you might not have thought about what the adult characters are doing and why they did certain things. And then you read it as an adult and you're like, oh, yeah. So they're not exactly a villain. They're just being a bit more overcautious and things like that. And it's a nice way to read a middle grade book as an adult. Like a wider view of everything and all the characters. It's like watching movies over and over again. Every now and then you're like, oh, I missed that bit the first time. I found it like that when you go back to some of the old stories.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It's very interesting reading middle grade books as an adult. There was a book I was reading recently. I don't remember what it was called, but it was this girl was living with her stepmother, and like she was like, "My stepmother is so unfair." And I was reading through being like, "Well, your stepmother is struggling and she's making some bad decisions and not really listening because she's overwhelmed." You just get this, as you said, this extra layer as an adult reading middle grades where you can see, understand more of the characters, relate to a wider view because you were the kids at one point and now you're an adult, so you kind of span the age gap.
Yeah, that is a good point because your brain is more developed at that point. Because I read a book, I read Hush by Jacqueline Woodson. Have either of you read Jacqueline Woodson books before? She's fabulous. But I read Hush in sixth grade and I enjoyed the book, but I got really nothing out of it. And then I reread it a couple of years ago, and I was like, oh, it's about racism. Because yeah, you see, you're not just like tagging along with the middle grade protagonist, you actually see the whole broader picture and you see the wide scope of what the adults are going through too. So yeah, there are many layers to it. That's a really good point. So with that in mind, I know we're going to be deep diving into how to write middle grade characters, but I do want to ask first, how would you typically structure a middle grade book?
In many ways, it's the same as writing in any other genre. You know, there's a beginning, a middle, a climax, and an end. You have a plot where you set up challenges for your characters to overcome. But there are definitely some unique elements. For example, you want to make sure you have light violence and no profanity. You want to save those really gory scenes for the YA genre. You also want to make sure you hook your readers early. You know, young readers are more likely to drop a book they don't like. Adult readers, you know, we can give a book a chance. If it starts out slow, we might see if it gets better later on. But kids, if they don't like a book, they'll just put it down and not continue reading. You also want to make sure that your plot focuses on problems that are relatable to young readers. They want to be able to see themselves in the heroes and really connect with the heroes. So things like school or unfair authority figures or first crushes are good things to put in, whereas serious romances and like jobs, not really something kids are going to be able to relate to. The final thing I'd say is that watch the word count, because middle grade books tend to have kind of on the shorter end of the word count, more along the lines of 25,000 to 50,000. Of course, if you're writing a little older in the genre, you can get up to more 70,000, especially if you're writing sci-fi or fantasy, they tend to be on the longer side. But since kids have shorter attention spans, they're less likely to pick up like a giant tome and work their way through it.
I actually really like how you mentioned their attention spans because it's not really something that I thought about before. And you're right. I nanny a couple of kids in the afternoons, and if they don't like a book, yeah, they'll put it down and it will never be seen again. Like they don't think it's just out of sight, out of mind. They're like, yeah, this is stupid, whatever. But as an adult, yeah, you'll either push yourself through it or you'll put it down and say, well, maybe I'll try again later. And you, 9 times out of 10, you will end up going back to that book. So yeah, the word count and having it be relatable and just having a theme that's within their current scope of their life is, yeah, hopefully the characters and everything else in the book will hold their attention span. So that's a really good point that I hadn't thought about.
Yeah, I agree with that. That really struck out to me because I mean, I have a pretty bad attention span at times, but as you said, even I can push through at least the first chapter if it's like droning on, because you think maybe the second chapter will be better. But I'm going to throw in a new question. I'm so sorry, but it's already come to me. because you said like relatability, now obviously a lot of characters, a lot of protagonists need to be relatable regarding most books, but I think adults are able to read books that are quite different. Do you find it's better to do first person perspective in middle grade, or does third person perspective work as well? What would you think? Is it like mostly just stick to first person?
I've heard that first person is very popular lately, and a lot of kids are looking for books written that point of view. Personally, I kind of write in a mix. I have written books in third person before, and I remember reading as a kid books in third person. So I don't know if it's like hugely important, but I think first person is something we would lean a little more towards in the genre these days.
I suppose I could understand that. I think it's because obviously I never used to like first person. I would only ever read third person. I don't know why. And then I think I ended up reading a book that was first person, and it kind of clicked more. And I don't know if it's because the protagonist was more like me than any of the other books, and it was just more relatable. So I suppose it's like if you're writing first person and you have a very specific protagonist, you'll probably get a lot more relatability from a certain group. So say it's like a little boy of a certain age, then you might get a lot more little boy readers who really identify with that. It won't stop, anyone else reading it. But yeah, it was just a thought. It was just a thought. We will move to the next question, the actual questions. How do you research writing for a younger audience?
One way you can research online that can be very useful is if you actually go to social media platforms where younger generations hang out. You don't want to go to Facebook, they're not there. I'd say TikTok, Snapchat, and Instagram tend to be the big three popular ones. And you can go and just observe, read or watch their posts, and pay attention to how they speak. What do they speak about? What are their senses of humors like? You can learn a lot from younger generations just by paying attention to their online presences. I think you've said this in podcasts before, but it's worth repeating. You also can, pay attention to kids you know in your life. If you have kids, if you have nieces or nephews, younger cousins, if you're a teacher or a coach of students. I have a much younger sister, and we're about a 9-year age gap. Her experiences going up to the exact same school district I did was very different from when I went there. For example, she has a school laptop and a lot of her homework is online. When I was in grade school, I had paper packets and I didn't have online homework until college. So it's not something I really would have thought of if I hadn't seen her go through it herself. And although things may change over time, it's also important to remember how you were at that age. As we get older, we kind of forget our childhoods and get out of touch with what was important to us back then. So it's good to get into the right headspace and think back. What did you care about when you were that age? What were your fears and concerns? Who was your best friend? What did you like doing? It's kind of like write what you know. I've been given the advice, write books for your younger self. What would you have wanted to read when you were that age? Write that book.
That's a really good point, especially because, as you said, like when I was at school, yeah, there was no computers, no computers at all. So, and it's hard to kind of put yourself in that space of, all right, yeah, they have tablets now, and they have computers and homework, and they use the internet for homework, whereas like we're going down to the library to pull out the encyclopedia to do homework. And I think I always find it weird because I always think, does that date books? Because obviously, whenever you write, especially if it's a modern book, you're going to have like maybe your kids will have a computer, maybe they'll have a mobile phone, but then maybe in like 30 years, they'll be using holograms. I don't know. But at the same time, I suppose I still like to read books that were like not even my time, like, my parents' time, some of their older ones, that were definitely different. And I don't find it's the same. I think if you read certain sci-fi books and it's really jarring where they're like they're talking about something that's like, oh, we've had that for ages. And they're like, oh, it's they have phones in the future. It's like, yeah, we had them back in, whatever. But I think with kids, it's like you can still get away with it not being too dated because as you said, things are still the same. Found families, friendships, the conflicts that kids have, falling out with a friend. First crush, having problems with you know, with a parent and issues at home and things like that. And it's weird when you said, like, you know, think about your old self. And I'm like, wow, I can't. I mean, I'm 43. I'm trying to think of things I did when I was little. And I suppose what I would probably do is pull out a photo album and look at pictures of what I did. Because I don't think you always remember how you felt and what you did. But then you look at a photo and go, I remember that. I remember falling and busting my lip open and being really sad because I got yelled at for falling and busting my lip open. And then you can kind of think back to what you were like as a kid, and you were like, oh yeah, that was just awful. I got really upset about that. Whereas now, if I fell, it'd be like, oh gosh, I'm so clumsy. So, but yeah, I do like the idea of the, like, watching and visiting social media, where especially TikTok, I think, because a video helps, doesn't it? Hearing how they speak, how they talk about events that they're dealing with or issues that they're going through. I think that can be quite useful if you can deal with TikTok, because I have to admit that stresses me out so badly.
Yeah, it does take a bit of time to learn a new social media. I'm not very good with technology, so I have to like spend like a month just not doing anything but figuring out how the system works. Like, how do I get the videos that I want? But you know, give yourself enough time, you'll get there. I feel like I've just reached the point where I understand Instagram, and I've been doing that for a couple months now.
Instagram and like all the social medias, they're such a pain. I have such a love-hate relationship with them all. But it is kind of funny, Ari, what you said about going on TikTok and seeing the videos and stuff and thinking back onto what you did as a kid. What I did as a kid, I grew up in the 90s, so I was outside all the time. I played kickball with the neighborhood friends, but we didn't have our phones. Well, we didn't have phones. We didn't have phones to sit there and take videos and pictures of us playing kickball and posing for the camera and doing these little dances. So it's actually quite funny to go on TikTok and you see the younger generations and they're outside, but they're posing for the camera and they're taking pictures of flowers and they're taking pictures of just the scenery and they're doing those TikTok dances and stuff. And it's kind of amazing how different things are now than they were back then. And also, I'm going to backtrack for a second. You mentioned the library. Did you guys have a library class in school?
No? Oh my
No, you
gosh,
didn't?
yes.
Ari, do
Well,
you?
yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, we used to, it was one of the specials, similar to like music and art. We would go to the library and the librarian would teach us about the Dewey Decimal System. And we would actually have tests on it and stuff.
Oh no, we didn't go to that level, but it was like
Oh
how
yeah.
books were set up and how the system, but there was no, it didn't go into that level of detail. But yeah, there was a library. I think it was just to keep everyone quiet. That was it. You went there and you had to stay quiet. That was all it was. But yes, oh my
No.
gosh, I do remember that.
I think we might have had something like that in elementary school, but there wasn't like tests. I just remember we'd go to the library and we'd talk about Dewey Decimal System, then we'd go and pick out books, and I'd always pick out the same books every time.
Oh yeah, no, I think everybody always picked out the same books. I did the same thing. It's like you're talking to me about the Dewey Decimal System. Nothing's retaining in my head. I know where my books are, so that's where I'm gonna go.
Did
Oh
you
man.
hide books though? Because I have to admit, every now and then, it's like if I found a really good one, I would hide it so that it was there the next time. Because sometimes I'd go and it had gone, and I'd be like, I'm not having that. So I would hide it behind other books, or boring books, and I'd be like, I know it's there, and I can always get it out. I was quite bad like that, but yes, I did used to hide books.
That makes more sense. I used to just not return them.
Yeah,
Would
that was more me
eventually,
too. But
yeah. I eventually I'd return them, like at the end of the school year or something, but I
there's
would always
fines
lose
and
it. Oh, not in
no.
school. They would try, but
They, oh
if
yeah,
you
we
didn't
got
pay,
fined.
whatever.
Did they not send a letter to your parents? I
Oh,
don't
they
remember
did,
that.
yeah. But I lost the book and I'm looking for it, quote unquote. There was one time I think I forgot to bring a book back when I was in middle school, and like I didn't know how much money it was, so like I put a couple of quarters inside the book and then I put it in the book drawer. No one ever said anything, and I don't know why I didn't think that they would not trace it back to me, because obviously they keep a log, but nobody said anything to me, so I just let it lie. I'm just gonna diverge. You know, we won't talk about stealing books from the library anymore. I'm just gonna go back in and with When it comes to writing middle grade characters, how important is representation in middle grade books? Because obviously you can research writing for a younger audience, but how do you go about making those characters relatable and, you know, representing all the different everybody?
I think representation is really, really important. Because, you know, middle grade readers, they're just kind of getting to the point where they're starting to develop a stronger sense of self and get a wider feel of the world and society around them. So when they read books with wide representation, it makes them more familiar with different types of people who aren't the same as them, and therefore also more accepting of different people. And also, if they read books of characters who are similar to them, it makes them more confident in themselves. A lot of times, I know you can feel very different from your peers around you. And reading books with the heroes who are like you, it makes you feel not alone and provides role models. I'm Arrow Ace, and I know growing up, I saw no characters that were like me outside of like robots and aliens who I didn't connect with at all. Kind of gave this idea of like, you need romance to be normal. And I didn't find anything really saying otherwise until college. Maybe if I'd had those role models when I was younger, I would have realized my true self sooner.
Yeah, I do agree with that, especially obviously if you have relatable characters, that's obviously a plus, but I never really thought of it from the opposite perspective where kids, I mean, might be a strong word, but hate is taught. I mean, I think we can all agree with that. So having different characters represented in books can show kids that, oh, we're all unique, we're all individuals, but we're all still human and we should just love each other and be kind and yada, yada, yada. Everybody knows that spiel. And having all the different representation, the different diversity, it can show kids like a different path and different options, I guess I should say, so that as they're trying to understand themselves and as they're growing and, you know, going through puberty and all that stuff, like they can kind of see, oh, what I'm going through is actually normal, or other people go through this as well. So yeah, I definitely can agree with that.
Well, I think it's like when you're an adult, you already have a lot more confidence. Even if you're not a confident person, there is always more confidence than when you're a child. And you know how to talk more about certain things. I'm not saying everyone, I'm not saying all the time, but you could sometimes have those conversations where I think with children especially, if they don't see a representation of themselves, they won't question it. It won't be, and they won't question it. Sorry, what I mean is they won't question it externally. They won't talk to friends and say, I don't get that. That's not how I see myself, or I don't feel those things. And I think that's the thing. It's, as an adult, you might be more likely to talk to your friend and say, I'm not like that. That's not how I feel. You know, I don't feel like how everyone else is showing themselves. And I think having it in kids' books, because they don't often talk to their parents and because they don't even talk to their peers, not on things like that, because as soon as you think that you're different and odd, it's almost built into society. It's like you shut that down. You don't let anyone know, because if you let someone know and then they reject you, you lose that family you've built up. Because I mean, like, your friendships are some of the strongest connections you have when you're little, because it's the first sort of step out of family. And depending on whether you're close to your family or whether you're very different from your family or whether there are problems in your family, those friendships can be stronger than a familial bond. But even then, it's like, if you're seeing yourself or you are different in some way, you might not want to tell anyone because you're so scared of losing the one thing you've got if you don't have it in another area of your life, or even if you do. So yeah, I definitely agree, some form of representation. And as you said, it's like for so many different things, like having a bigger diversity, especially if you are growing up in an area that is not diverse. I know in certain places in America, there are very, like, a lot of like lacking of diversity. We have it in the UK as well. Certain areas can be a certain way, and it just adds to what you already have with your experiences as you grow up. So I definitely think having some form of representation and making it clear that there is diversity and it's absolutely fine, and it brings people together in a way, you know, because as Rachel said, it's like, yeah, people are people. So, and everyone is different in so many different ways. So yeah, I definitely agree with that.
I think the other thing is too, kids, as they grow up, especially like when they're preteens and, you know, becoming teenagers, they don't know how to regulate their emotions quite yet. So when they do become friends, especially like in elementary school, if you went to school wearing the same shirt as somebody, you'd be like, hey, we have the same taste in clothes. We're friends. And it was just that simple. And then as you get older, you kind of gravitate towards that. You find like-minded people to be your friends, and you find stuff that you guys have in common. And then as you get older, you kind of realize that, well, opposites can attract, and you don't necessarily want to surround yourself with everybody that has the same opinions as you, that has the same likes and dislikes as you. You want to have a little variety. So I think adding that representation shows kids that it's like, oh, just because I'm super different from this person, that doesn't mean that we can't be friends.
With that, we're going to bounce to another question. So what are some tips you have for writing middle grade characters if someone has never ever tried writing middle grade before and wouldn't know how to begin?
Sure. Number one, the first place I would say start is, again, like we said before, try to pull from real life as much as possible. You know, they say, write what you know, and that's a good place to kind of lay the foundation, the basis. Number two, make sure that as you're starting off, that you are writing people and not stereotypes. These characters are young, but they're still people with real problems that should be taken seriously. I remember when I was a teenager, I hated all teenage characters in media because they were all just stereotypical. They were over-emotional and rebellious and whiny. I wasn't like that at all, so I felt completely unseen and misunderstood. If you talk down to your readers and not make the characters individuals, they're going to notice. So as you're writing, stop, take a moment to ask yourself, okay, is this a unique character? Or am I just relying on what society says the age group is like? Also, we mentioned earlier how important representation is. It is important. It's also important to make sure you're representing well and accurately. A great way to do that is to go online and find stories of real life people who are similar to your characters. Read them, familiarize yourself with their experiences. So for example, if your main character is in a wheelchair and you're not, read about people's lives in wheelchairs. What are their lives and experiences like? It's also a good idea to hire a sensitivity reader, or a couple of them, to check over your work once you're finished. And the third tip I would give, which is very important, is to read middle grade books. Reading a lot in your genre, it not only familiarizes yourself with the genre in general, but it gets you into that headspace of writing your characters. Make sure you're focusing on books that are very popular among your audience. If they're that popular, odds are they've done something right with the characters, and you can study and learn from them. So it's always good to make sure you're reading in your genre.
Would you recommend actually using middle grade children, if you know any, to actually like beta read the book before you publish it? Would that be quite useful? Because obviously I know most people, when they get betas, it's automatically usually an adult, and I think that's always a good idea anyway, because as you said, middle grade should be appropriate for adults and children alike, for easier. But would you think it'd be quite useful to get a couple of middle grade age children to actually read through a book before you publish it, so it gets an idea? Or is that like, no?
Oh, definitely, because then you're getting feedback directly from like your main audience. Like, as you said, it is good to have some adults because you want your books accessible to many ages, and adults are more likely to give you more like technical feedback, like, hey, you had this plot hole here, or hey, this whole storyline didn't quite make sense. Maybe you should restructure it. Whereas kids, they're going to give you honest feedback of like, wow, this character came off annoying to me, or that didn't seem like something I would do. Or they might even spot plot holes as well. I know sometimes online kids will go on and be like, hey, in my book that I read, this didn't make any sense. And they can be very straightforward and honest about that, which is very valuable when you're trying to get beta readers, is to really get that feel of how is my wider audience going to react, but in a small subset.
I don't know if I could cope with that, the idea, because I can imagine kids will be quite blunt in a nice way, but kind of, like, this character sucks. I didn't like them at all. It's like, oh, wow, that just in the heart kind of pain moment.
Yeah, you've really got to get a thick skin if you're going to do that.
Kids have no filter. And that's like one of the beauty of being a kid is that like you have no filter and you have a good excuse to not have a filter because you are a kid. But that's actually a really good way to test the engagement and like the interest of, whatever your book is about. Because I review video games for Pure Nintendo Magazine, and I've gotten a couple of like edutainment type games, and I've given them to my nephews when they're over. And I'm like, here, I got a new game. You want to try it out? And there have been some games where they were literally like, this is stupid. They've played it for 2 seconds and they walked away. And then there are other games that they sat there for hours. There was a game that took 5 minutes to get through. It was all about the seasons, and they sat there for hours just doing it over and over again. And I was like, okay, well, I guess this is a win. So, yeah, you can actually learn a lot if you go directly to the source.
Just out of curiosity, because it's like, do series work well with middle grade, or do you think it's better to do lots of one-offs? I mean, I can understand, obviously, we know the concept that if you write a series, you already, if you can catch your audience with book one, then you've kind of got almost like prepackaged, I hate that term, set of fans that might like go through the whole series. But thinking about kids, thinking about attention, see, attention levels, and do you think it is a good idea to try a full series, or is it a bit of both? I don't know. What do you think?
I remember when I was that age, I loved series. I tended to try to go through the whole thing. I'd like read it in a week. I don't know if I was a typical child at that age or not, but I mean, I write series. I think they tend to be very popular. I mean, look at like the Percy Jackson series. There's what, like three different series he's written in this for this one character in this one universe, and he's still adding more to it, and the audience is eating it up. So I think series is okay. I don't know if I've actually seen a lot of standalone middle grades as often, actually. Maybe I'm just not looking in the right areas.
I was just gonna say, I feel like I don't see a whole lot of standalone middle grade novels either. I think they are mostly series because going back to the whole engagement thing and the child's attention span, they find a book with a cast of characters that they really like and a solid plot, they're gonna want more. And I think that's why so many middle grade series are like 30, 40, 50 books long. It's not often you even find like a trilogy or duology. They're usually like a handful of books long.
Okay, yeah, no, it's because I think a few I remember from it being little worse standalones, but then obviously it's interesting because it's like, do you if you're talking about your series, are they like a continual one, or is it episodic? Do you find episodic works better, that where a child can kind of bounce in and out and they don't have to follow any big plot? Or do you think, because obviously I think the Percy Jackson one is an arcing plot, isn't it? Like, I haven't read them, so I'm guessing that it's not episodic.
I think it's kind of somewhere in between because you want an overarching plot connecting the books, but each individual book has its own like kind of mini plot. Like there's a villain to overcome, where you go through a series of monsters. So each book themselves has something new to keep your interest, but then the major villain keeps the whole thing linked together. I remember reading a book series, the Septimus Heap series, when I was young, and each book would, exactly as I said, have its own villain. But then the further you went, the more you were like, there's this element that's connecting them all together that I didn't notice before. And of course, that ended up being the big villain at the end that they had to overcome.
I apologize, but I'm gonna backtrack for a second. Sorry for my scattered brain. We were talking about being relatable and having relatable characters in our middle grade stories and stuff. But there are so many middle grade books where the main characters or the cast of characters are animals. What are your thoughts on that? Because I love it.
Writing animals is interesting because you kind of have a mix where being an animal is inherently not very relatable because we are not cats or dogs or birds, but it's still a character. You know, they have their desires, the desire to make more friends or protect your friends. That's still something we can relate to. Maybe you're a cat who really loves to play, and the cat has to set that aside for a moment so it can help his friends. That's something we can also relate to because, you know, kids love to play, and that story would kind of have a lesson of, okay, but sometimes you have to get serious once in a while so that you can accomplish what you need to. And also, it's kind of almost wish fulfillment. I remember as a, like a small child wanting to be a cat sometimes. So you get older, you start reading these books, and it's like, yeah, that's so much fun being a cat. So you kind of fulfill that fantastic desire.
That's a really, really good point. When I was little, I used to pretend I was a lion. Like I thought if I were a mutant from the X-Men, I would have the power to transform myself into a lion. And so yeah, I get that. That's a mood right there.
I have to admit, I remember one of my favorite series when I was little was The Animals of Fardingwood, which was obviously wild animals, and everything. But because I liked nature and animals, and then you realize they were still the found friends. You know, there were predators and prey, and they came together, and then they had to overcome this obstacle together, and they had to work out what was their strengths and their weaknesses. So while it wasn't relatable because, you know, we weren't foxes or kestrels or anything, I remember enjoying it because I liked nature and because there were still those found families and those moments of like heroism that you kind of always want to kind of like, yay, look, they got through that difficult part. So yeah, I always like that. And also, I'm just going to say, as someone who likes to draw, I can't draw people, but I can draw animals. So it was always fun to read books with animals because then I could draw them, but I couldn't draw people. So I'm just going to throw that.
Yeah, I think it's true of a lot of fantasy that you can have the characters in situations that you would never be able to relate to. Like, you're never going to be climbing Mordor to throw the ring into the fire. But the themes and the characters themselves, that's really, really where you ground it, where you can find that relatability and that connection.
That's about the journey, not the destination. All right. I think we had a pretty good discussion. And thank you so much, Serena, for joining us. It's really been great having you on the podcast. But before we go, would you like to share something about yourself with our listeners?
Sure. So I'm a fantasy author. I mainly write middle grade and YA. I got my start writing stories on loose leaf between classes in school. And since then, my stories have matured as I have. But the wonder and adventure of middle grade has always held a special place in my heart. And so I'm currently working on a middle grade fantasy novel called Fledged in Storms. And if you want to keep updated on its progress or just learn more about me, you can find me on my website. And I also post a lot on Instagram.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks again for joining us on the podcast. And all of Serena's links will be in the description below if you'd like to go check out her work, and please do. But in the meantime, we're going to turn it over to you guys. Let us know how you write your middle grade characters, and also let us know what your favorite middle grade character is. I don't think we've ever done a question like that, so I'm throwing you all for a loop. Let us know these answers in the comments so we can chat about it. And remember, we release a new episode every Wednesday. Next week, we're discussing writing short form stories. So to ensure you don't miss it, hit the subscribe button on your way out. And as always, thank you for listening to the Merry Writer Podcast. We'll see you next week. This podcast is brought to you by Shiny Objects. We're easily distracted. The music, titled Inspired, is by Kevin MacLeod, licensed under Creative Commons 4.0.